Well, Mr. Adams, welcome to Rhode Island, which must have a special resonance for your agency because, of course, the late Senator Claiborne Pell was the father of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Indeed he was, and he's one of several reasons I wanted to come and visit Rhode Island. Senator Reed, his successor, being another. There are lots of other reasons to be in Rhode Island, an extraordinary legacy of cultural institutions, historical institutions that NEH has supported over a very long period of time. And going even further back, one of the other founders of NEH, Barnaby Keeney, former president of the University of Rhode Island, was the first chairman of NEH. So a lot of reasons to be here.
You know, we understand you have an interest in Roger Williams, the first white settler of Rhode Island, and the founder of our state. What do you think Williams' legacy is in the 21st century?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I actually taught Roger Williams when I was teaching political theory and American political thought way back in the early part of my career. Williams, of course, was known as an independent-minded religious leader, and the impact of his church and his teachings on the early American Republic are enormous. I think it's primarily that independence of spirit, that distrust of bureaucracy and hierarchy, that democratic impulse that he represented so powerfully and clearly as one of the principal legacies that he had on the founding of the American Republic.
Now, you're here to announce more than $100,000 in new grants to Rhode Island organizations. How much does the Humanities Council, how much do you folks invest in Rhode Island in an average year?
We invest in Rhode Island in two different ways. The National Endowment for the Humanities and its grant-making program have given roughly $4 million to Rhode Island institutions over the last 5 years. But we also give an annual operating budget to the Rhode Island Council of the Humanities, and they in turn re-grant those dollars, in many cases, to other local institutions.
What do you think would happen if NEH funding to the states was cut or eliminated, as some in Washington have proposed?
Well, it would do tremendous damage to these cultural institutions. And Senator Reed, who's been one of our most important champions, the Rhode Island Historical Society, all of the institutions that the Humanities Council here is supporting, all of that support goes away, and that would have huge implications for the cultural infrastructure of the country. We have built that infrastructure over 50 years, along with the National Endowment for the Arts. It's been an immense achievement in this country, and we would put that all at risk.
You know, many of your grants do go to professors at private institutions, such as Brown University here. How do you respond to criticism that this benefits wealthy institutions more than ordinary Americans?
I think if you look across the broad spread of our grant making, it's hard to hang on to a perception that we're focused on elite institutions. We do grant making with thousands of small community organizations, libraries, historical societies, including the Rhode Island Historical Society, other cultural organizations in communities across the country. We have had a record of supporting excellent projects at excellent institutions, and that inevitably means that we support places like Brown University, where there is such an extraordinary record of excellence and achievement in the humanities. But we go way beyond those institutions, and most of our grant-making actually occurs in smaller and less well-known places than Brown.
You, of course, were the president of Colby College and before that Bucknell. And I'm wondering, are you concerned that there is fewer college students these days who are majoring in the humanities, say history or English, and more folks going into computer science and engineering and the mathematical-based majors? It seems like it's hard for humanities majors to get jobs when they get out of school. How do we address that?
Well, I am concerned about it to the degree that it leads institutions, public and private, to de-emphasize the humanities and to step away from that hugely important and almost uniquely American concept of educating the whole human being. That's been a part of our liberal educational tradition since the beginning, going back to the Puritans and that era. And it has been one of the most important ingredients of the excellence of American higher education. So it does bother me. I think we need to insist upon that notion of educating the whole human being. And the humanities are enormously important to that. I would also say that the really significant problems that we're facing as a society are not fundamentally technical problems. They're problems that have to do with our history, with our culture, our ideas and values. I'll give you a good example. A couple of weeks ago, some geneticists, very prominent people in the bioengineering world, announced that they were calling for a halt to a certain kind of genetic engineering and experimentation with genetic engineering because we didn't understand fully the implications of some of this work and that we needed to think more deeply about the ethical positions, the philosophical positions, the meaning of that work. And one of them said even the nature of our humanity was at stake in that. I find that exemplary of many, many other kinds of things we're struggling with as a country, the relationship between liberty and security, all of the deep questions that come from information technology and the digital universe that we're in, these questions of veterans and bringing them back into our lives and dealing with the legacies of our conflicts. These are all fundamental to the humanities, and we need them not only as educators, we need them as citizens of the country to be able to grapple with the things that are before us.
Thank you, William Adams, the head of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Thank you.